And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is May 25th, 145th day of the year. 220 days remain till the year is over with. On this day in 567 BC, Servius Tullius, the king of Rome, celebrates a triumph for his victory over the Etruscans. In 240 BC, the first recorded perihelion passage of Halley's Comet. Of course, I don't think Halley was around then, but who knows. 1085, Alfonso VI of Castile takes Toledo, Spain back from the Moors. 1420, Henry the Navigator is appointed governor of the Order of Christ. 1521, the Diet of Worms ends when Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor, issues the Edict of Worms, declaring Martin Luther an outlaw. You don't believe the way I believe? We gonna hang you. 1644, Ming General Wu Sangui forms an alliance with the invading Manchus and opens the gates of the Great Wall of China at Shenheguan Pass, letting the Manchus through toward the capital, Beijing. 1659, Richard Cromwell resigns as Lord Protector of England following the restoration of the Long Parliament, beginning a second brief period of republican government, which was referred to as the Commonwealth of England. 1660, Charles II lands at Dover at the invitation of the Convention Parliament. It marks the end of the Cromwell-proclaimed Commonwealth of England, Scotland, and Ireland, and begins the restoration of the British monarchy. 1738, a treaty between Pennsylvania and Maryland ends the Conojocular War with settlement of a boundary dispute and exchange of prisoners. 1787, after a delay of 11 days, a U.S. Constitutional Convention formally convenes in Philadelphia after a quorum of seven states is secured. 1798, United Irishmen Rebellion, Battle of Carlo begins. Executions of suspected rebels at Carnew and Dunlavin Green take place. 1809, Quickwasaka Revolution. Patriot vote in Chuquisaca, modern-day Sucre, against the Spanish Empire, sparking the Latin American Wars of Independence. 1810, the May Revolution. Citizens of Buenos Aires expel Viceroy Baltazar Hidalgo de Cisneros during the May week, starting the Argentine War of Independence. 1819, the Argentine Constitution of 1819 is promulgated. 1833, the Chilean Constitution of 1833 is promulgated. 1865, in Mobile, Alabama, 300 people are killed when an ordnance depot explodes. That'll make your day wake up. 1878, Gilbert and Sullivan's comic opera, HMS Pinafore, opens at the Opera Comique in London. 1895, playwright, poet, and novelist Oscar Wilde is convicted of committing acts of gross indecency with other male persons, sentenced to 2 years in prison. 1895, the Republic of Formosa is formed with Tang Jingsong as the president. 1914, the House of Commons of the UK passes the Home Rule Bill for devolution in Ireland. 1925, Scopes Trial. That's also known as the Monkey Trial. John T. Scopes is indicted for teaching human evolution in Tennessee. 1926, Sholem Schwartzbard assassinates Simon Petliura, the head of the government of the Ukrainian People's Republic, which is in government in exile in Paris. 1935, Jesse Owens of Ohio State University breaks three world records and ties a fourth at the Big Ten Conference Track and Field Championships in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He went on to embarrass Hitler. 1938, Spanish Civil War, the bombing of Alicante kills 313 people. 1940, World War II, the German 2nd Panzer Division captures the port of Boulogne-sur-Mer. Surrender to the last French and British troops marks the end of the Battle of Boulogne. 1941, 1946, the Parliament of Transjordan makes Abdullah I of Jordan their emir. 1953, nuclear weapons testing. At the Nevada test site, the U.S. conducts its first and only nuclear artillery test. When I was in the military, they developed what they called a nuclear hand grenade. It could devastate everything within a 50-yard radius. The only problem is, because of its weight, the best anybody could do was throw it 30 yards. So it basically was a non-starter. 1953, the first public television station in the U.S. officially begins broadcasting as KUHT from the campus of the University of Houston. 1955, in the U.S., a nighttime F5 tornado strikes the city of Eudal, Kansas, kills 80, injures 273. Deadliest tornado to ever occur in that state and the 23rd deadliest in the U.S. 1955, the first ascent of Mount Kangchenjunga on the British Kangchenjunga expedition led by Charles Evans, Joe Brown, and George Bann. They reached the summit of the third highest mountain in the world, 8,586 meters. Norman Hardy and Tony Streether joined them the following day. 1961, Apollo program. President Kennedy announces before a special joint session of Congress his goal to initiate a project to put a man on the moon before the end of the decade. And he did it. 1963, the Organization of African Unities established in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. 1966, Explorer program. Explorer 32 is launched. 1968, the Gateway Arch in St. Louis, Missouri is dedicated. 1973, in protest against the dictatorship in Greece, the captain and crew on Greek naval destroyer Vilos mutiny and refuse to come back to Greece. Instead, they anchor at Fiumicino in Italy. 1977, Star Wars. Retroactively titled Star Wars Episode VI, A New Hope, is released in theaters. Also in 77, a Chinese government removes a decade-old ban on William Shakespeare's work, effectively ending the Cultural Revolution started in 1966. In 1978, the first of a series of bombings orchestrated by the Unabomber detonates at Northwestern University. Minor injuries. 1979, John Spinkelink, a convicted murderer, is executed in Florida. He is the first person to be executed in that state after the reintroduction of capital punishment in 1976. 1979, American Airlines Flight 191 and McDonnell Douglas DC-10 crashes during takeoff at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago. Kills all 271 on board and two people on the ground. Now, how lucky do you have to, or unlucky do you have to be if you get hit by a falling plane? 1981, in Riyadh, the Gulf Cooperation Council is created between Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and United Arab Emirates. 1982, the Falklands War. HMS Coventry is sunk by the Argentine Air Force, A4 Skyhawks, which of course they got from us. 1985, Bangladesh is hit by a tropical cyclone and storm surge. About 10,000 people are said to have died. 1986, the Hands Across America event takes place. How did they do that in the Mississippi, I wonder? 1997, a military coup in Sierra Leone replaces President Ahmad Tihan Kaba with Major Johnny Paul Karoma. 1999, the U.S. House of Representatives releases the Cox Report, which details China's nuclear espionage against the U.S. over the prior two decades. How about now, folks? 2000, the liberation of Lebanon. Israel withdraws its army from the Lebanese territory, with the exception of the disputed Sheba Farm Zone, 18 years after they invaded in 1982. 2001, Eric Weihenmayer becomes the first blind person to reach the summit of Mount Everest in the Himalayas. He's with Dr. Sherman Bull. 2002, China Airlines Flight 611 disintegrates in midair and crashes into Taiwan Strait. All 225 people on board are killed. 2008, NASA's Phoenix lander touches down in the Green Valley region of Mars. It's searching for an environment suitable for water and microbial life. 2009, North Korea allegedly tests its second nuclear device, after which Pyongyang conducts several missile tests, building tensions in the international community. 2011, Oprah Winfrey airs her last show, ends her 25-year run of the Oprah Winfrey Show. 2012, the SpaceX Dragon becomes the first commercial spacecraft to successfully rendezvous and berth with the International Space Station. 2013, suspected Maoist rebels kill at least 28 and injure 32 others in an attack on a convoy of Indian National Congress politicians at Chhattisgarh in India. 2013, a gas cylinder explodes on a school bus in the Pakistani city of Gujarat, kills at least 18. 2018, the General Data Protection Regulation becomes enforceable in the European Union. Also in 2018, Ireland votes to repeal the Eighth Amendment of their constitution that prohibits abortion in all but a few cases, choosing to replace it with the 36th Amendment of the Constitution of Ireland. 2020, George Floyd, a black man, is murdered in Minneapolis, Minnesota during an arrest when he's forced into a prone position face down on the ground for more than 9 minutes. Provokes protests across the U.S. and around the world. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Africa Day in the African Union. African Liberation Day in the African Union and Rastafari. Christian Feast Day, Aldhelm, Beatty, Canius, Dionysius of Milan, Dunchad Maxen Feinlad, Gerard of Lunel, Madeleine Sophie Barat, Mary Magdalene de Pazzi, Maximus of Evreux, Pope Boniface IV, Pope Gregory VII, Pope Urban I, Zenobius of Florence. Earliest day in which Arbor Day can fall, May 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Sunday in May in Venezuela. Earliest day in which Children's Day can fall, May 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Sunday in May in Hungary. Earliest day in which Holiday of St. Etzmiadzin can fall, July 27th is the latest, celebrated on the 64th day after Easter in Armenia. Earliest day in which Memorial Day can fall, May 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Monday in May in the U.S. Earliest day in which Mother's Day can fall, May 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Sunday in May in Algeria, Dominican Republic, France. In France, it is the first Sunday of June if Pentecost occurs on this day. It's also celebrated in Haiti, Mauritius, Morocco, Sweden, and Tunisia. Earliest day in which the Turkmen Carpet Day can fall, May 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Sunday in May in Turkmenistan. First National Government National Day in Argentina. Geek Pride Day in the geek culture. Independence Day celebrates independence of Jordan from the UK in 1946. What's known as the Last Bell, it's Russia, post-Soviet countries. Liberation Day in Lebanon. International Missing Children's Day and its observances. In the U.S., it's National Missing Children's Day. Also in the U.S., it's National Tap Dance Day. And Towel Day in honor of the work of the writer Douglas Adams. Okay, let's see what else we might have. In 1085, Alfonso VI of Leon and Castile captures the Muslim Taifa of Toledo. 1241 is the first attack on the Jewish community of Frankfurt am Main in Germany. 1522, Holy Roman Emperor Charles V returns to Spain. 1632, general and nobleman Albrecht von Wallenstein recaptures Prague on Saxon. 1659, Richard Cromwell resigns as Lord Protector of England. He earns the nickname Tumble Down Dick as a result of his abrupt fall from power. 1716, Great Britain and Holy Roman Empire signed the Treaty of Westminster, which is a defensive pact. 1720, the ship Le Grand Saint Anthony reaches Marseille. It also brings with it Europe's last major plague outbreak. About 100,000 people die. 1721, John Copson becomes America's first insurance agent. 1787, on this date, the Constitutional Convention opens in Philadelphia. George Washington presides. 1793, Father Stephen Theodore Baden is the first U.S. Roman Catholic priest to be ordained in this country. 1810, the Primera Junta, the local government, is established in Argentina. 1825, the American Unitarian Association is founded. 1837, the Patriots of Lower Canada, which is also known as Quebec, rebel against the British. They want freedom. 1842, Christian Doppler presents his idea. He's a physicist. It's now known as the Doppler effect. He presented it to the Royal Bohemian Society in Prague. 1844, first telegraph news dispatched is published in the Baltimore Patriot. 1861, John Merryman is arrested under suspension of the writ of habeas corpus. It sparks a Supreme Court decision protecting the writ. Abraham Lincoln had suspended it unlawfully. 1862, the first Battle of Winchester in Virginia. 1864, Battle of New Hope Church in Georgia. 1868, Australian Aboriginal Cricket Tour of England begins versus Surrey Gentlemen. 1887, a gas lamp at the Paris Opera catches on fire. 200 people die in the ensuing confusion. 1911, revolution in Mexico overthrows president for life, José Porfirio Díaz. We have a street named after him here. 1922, for those that care about trivia, on this date, Babe Ruth was suspended for one day and fined $200, which was a substantial sum in those days, for throwing dirt on an umpire. 1927, Henry Ford announces he's ending production of the Model T. 1932, Goofy, also known as Dippy Dog, first appears in Mickey's Review. It was by Walt Disney. 1937, the first airmail letter to Circle the Globe returns to New York. 1938, Spanish Civil War, the Battle of the bombing of Alicante takes place. 313 die. 1943, there's a riot at Mobile, Alabama shipyard over the upgrading of 12 black workers. What does any of that matter? 1943, Agnes Moorehead, the mother on Bewitched, appears in Sorry Wrong Number on the radio program Suspense. That was her most successful appearance. 1944, Tito escapes the Germans surrounding Bosnia. 1945, Arthur C. Clarke proposes relay satellites in zero-synchronous orbit. 1947, coal dust explosion rocks Centralia Coal Company's mine number 5. 111 people die. 1948, Polish war hero Witold Pilecki is executed by communist police after a show trial was held in Warsaw. 1949, the Chinese Red Army captures and occupies Shanghai. 1953, the first non-commercial educational television station is opened in Houston, Texas. 1959, the U.S. Supreme Court rules that Louisiana, which prohibited black and white boxing, that rule was unconstitutional. And on that note, we've come to the end of our history session. We're going to talk about more military encounters with extraterrestrials. Yes, we are. We're going to start out talking about close encounters of the Axis kind. Now, it was Wernher von Braun who made the comment, with 100 billion stars in our galaxy alone, what makes us think we're the only life form? Now, his question was answered definitively on February 3rd, 1942. When aviatrix Hannah Reich, that was Germany's famous female test pilot, who is thought to have flown Hitler and Eva Braun out of Berlin, but she took off on the world's first operational rocket-powered fighter plane. It was still experimental. It was the Messerschmitt 163A V4, the Comet. It was climbing at 525 feet per second, to 7.5 miles above the Earth. It went almost straight up. It was a silvery, and then a silvery, luminous disc shot past her as though the comet was standing still. And it went up to 60,000 feet, 2,600 feet higher than the Messerschmitt's maximum ceiling. Now, this object didn't have an insignia, and it vanished almost as quickly as it appeared. Now, had U.S. flight crews witnessed that encounter, they would have undoubtedly recognized what she saw as a typical Foo Fighter. Assuming that such nimble enigmas were Nazi secret weapons of some unknown type, we were surprised to learn after the war that German flyers had no less frequently witnessed the same phenomena, which they attributed to the technology of the Allies. According to Henry Stevens, author of Hitler's Flying Saucers, rumors of these objects circulated in Luftwaffe pilot circles since the summer of 44. That same year, they were first glimpsed in significant numbers by Allied airmen. And while the aircraft and several RAF bombers had been buzzed by Foo Fighters after dark January 1, 1945, pilot Lieutenant Jack Green and his navigator, Lieutenant Warren Barber, were told by an ex-intelligence officer that the German pilots who were up that night reported identically the same thing as the British pilots. And the Luftwaffe never figured out what it was that was buzzing their planes. Now, a typical German encounter confirmed, rather unusually, by both visual and ground radar contacts at the same moment took place March 14, 1942, at about 5:30 in the afternoon. A pilot of a Messerschmitt 109F4Z, which was a plane designed for high-altitude performances, flying patrol 39,370 feet over Norway's Bannock Peninsula. And he was approached by a featureless, cigar-shaped object, 50 feet in diameter and 330 feet long. It kept pace with him for a moment and then shot straight up at an impossible speed. Now, Foo Fighters even seen by civilian ground observers in Germany. Late June of 1944, Martha Fritsch, wife of physics professor Alois Fritsch, saw the outline of a perfectly elliptical flying object in the twilight, which appeared to her to be operating by some other means of flight than was normally the case because of its sudden directional changes. Now, her first reaction was to think it was an enemy flying object, and it scared her because she thought, they might be bombed. Another ground sighting was made about that same time by Heinz Heller, commanding officer of a German army truck company in Conville, France. That's after the British, the Canadians, and the Americans had landed in Normandy. Convoy was concealed under an overhanging orchard where he and most of his men were asleep about 3 a.m. He reported the sharp report of a gunshot brought everybody to their feet. He'd been fired by the sentry who'd observed a round-shaped thing looking like a discus of about 65 feet diameter, very slightly luminescent, moving about 20 miles an hour, about 30 feet over the ground, and then accelerated vertically at an incredible speed, shining strongly, making a whooshing sound as it took off. He'd fired his rifle not at the thing, but to awaken his comrades. In recounting this particular sighting, author Keith Chester related how the following morning the orchard's owner was questioned, said his grandfather once had seen a similar apparition over that same field. Now, the crew in the German submarine U-629 experienced a remarkable close encounter out at sea in the North Atlantic Ocean during their vessel's 10th patrol. On a clear, calm evening between March 10th and 14th in 1944, this Type 7C boat was surfaced in the Bay of Biscay when the radio operator reported an airborne contact approaching at exceptionally high speed. Before Oberlieutenant Zur, Z, that's the equivalent to a lieutenant junior grade in the U.S. Navy, Hans Helmuth Bugs, which is also pronounced books, was keeping his lookouts company in the conning tower, could sound the alarm. The sub was approached by a flying disc that winked yellow and red at the Germans, but made no threatening moves. Whatever message that anomalous vehicle may have been attempting to send, nobody could guess and refrained from responding with their signal light. The otherwise motionless disc hovered as though nailed in place, maybe 40 feet above the water. It stayed there for less than 5 minutes, as though waiting for an answer to its visual display. Then it disappeared vertically into the night sky at an impossible speed. In a reaction typical for the times, Lieutenant Books surmised that the Allies were using some sort of strange new aircraft. Now, June 7th, 1944, during the U-629's next cruise, an RAF B-24 Liberator, long-range heavy bomber, the 53rd Squadron, attacked with depth charges in English Channel as the crew was about to intercept Allied naval forces supporting Operation Overlord's invasion of France. As a result of this action, the U-629 was sunk with the loss of all hands. As Germany's chief source of oil, Romania was often targeted by U.S. bombers. Immediately after one such raid, August 1, 1943, engineer George Zimmerano was standing near Palazzi's Vague oil refinery, where one of its petroleum tanks was still burning, when he noticed a pointed object coming from the north. He said it was yellow and had a whitish tail, which, when it met the clouds of smoke, seemed to shorten and vibrate in a strange way. He said the object traveled at a high rate of speed, and with the burning refinery, it turned, stopped momentarily, and zigzagged toward the north and vanished, which is the story of most of these encounters. After a few moments, they vanished at unbelievably high speeds. Now, 3 years earlier in the south of Hungary, Romania's next-door neighbor and access partner, Lieutenant General Vilmos Nagy, was overseeing midsummer maneuvers of the Hungarian First Army when his troops were astounded to see something he described as an immense fiery cartwheel. It slowly descended from a hilltop near the village of Bata before it suddenly shot away vertically at tremendous speed. It didn't make a sound and vanished into the early afternoon sky. Now, Nagy informed Miklos Horthy, Hungary's regent, that the object was doubtless a secret Soviet spy device of some kind. Although not officially one of the Axis partners, Spain sent 45,482 volunteers to fight on the Eastern Front in Germany's 250th Infantry Division, otherwise known as the Blue Division, which derived its name from the blue-shirted phalangist victors in the Spanish Civil War. The Battle of Krasny Bor, where the Spaniards defeated a Soviet attempt to relieve the Wehrmacht siege of Leningrad between February 10th and 13th, 1943, hundreds of them reported seeing a wash tub shaped vehicle, great size, noiselessly suspended above about 300 feet over the fighting for about the 5 minutes before moving off faster than any aircraft of which they were familiar. Now, a German test pilot was trying out a new Messerschmitt Me-262 Swallow jet fighter on September 29, 1944, according to Yves Nod, when his attention was suddenly caught by two luminous points situated on his right. He shot at full speed in her direction, found himself face to face with a cylindrical object more than 300 feet long, had some openings along the side, and fitted with a long antenna placed in front up to about halfway along its length. Having got to within about 1,500 feet of the craft, the pilot was amazed to see it was moving at a speed of more than 1,200 miles per hour, twice the speed of his jet at that time, and that was the world's fastest operational warplane. 5 years later, ground personnel observed something remarkably similar, silently hovering over Davis Monthan Air Force Base for about 10 seconds, fluttering as it disappeared in Arizona's cloudless spring sky. Materialized around 5 p.m., May 5th, 1949, the object was described as black, round, and flat in shape, similar to a wash tub. Next year, on the late afternoon of September 20th, the object, or something like it, appeared over a small city in southeastern Missouri. Many residents of Poplar Bluff described the UFO as a translucent wash tub, according to Bryce Baker, who was an author. You know, it wasn't just the Germans who were seeing strange things. Japanese airmen were photographing unidentified flying spears and discs 5 years before the Allies encountered identical Foo Fighters over Europe. After carrier-based Nakajima BN-5 torpedo bombers spearheaded the attack on Pearl Harbor, crew members aboard those aircraft were joined by extraterrestrial escorts all the way back to their ship. Now, for most of World War II, Japanese encounters of Foo Fighters were nonviolent. And that would change April 24, 1945, at the Imperial Japanese Navy's Ginzan Air Group Base in Wonsan, a port city located on the eastern side of the Korean Peninsula, facing the Sea of Japan. About 3 in the afternoon, ground observers sounded the alarm at the approach of an unidentified aircraft, which was coming in at about 1,000 feet. A trio of Mitsubishi A6M2B0 fighters were scrambled and soon after closed with two unmarked silver discs. Each disc was estimated to be about 100 feet in diameter. With their twin wing-mounted cannons, the Japanese pilots immediately commenced firing on these strange vessels, one of which was repeatedly struck by 20-millimeter rounds, but didn't seem to have any effect. Though it was apparently somewhat damaged, its companion then shone a bright beam of light on the nearest zero, which spun out of control and crashed into the sea. With this parting shot, the intruders rapidly ascended beyond the capabilities of the zeros and disappeared at high altitude. So clearly, if the firing is intense, it can cause some damage. Now, ufologists contend that for reasons unknown, some multiple sightings of such phenomena seem to cluster around specific geographic areas. Less than 7 years later, we made our own sightings in the same area of Korea. It's about midnight, January 29, 1952. The crew members aboard a Boeing Super Fortress observed flying discs moving parallel to their plane at a high altitude. That was according to a United Press International wire story that was reported in D.C.'s Daily News for February 19th. Story said the object remained with the B-29 over Wonsan for 5 minutes and with the B-29 over Suchan for 1 minute, according to an Air Force spokesman. That spokesman indicated that several were sighted but didn't give the number. Same time, another B-29 from a different squadron over Suncheon, about 90 miles northwest, also encountered unknown craft. Described by four eyewitnesses as globe-shaped, bright orange in color, and emitting an occasional flash of bluish light. Now, officials declined to elaborate on the bare announcement that the full investigation is underway. But open-minded Air Force attitude toward the new reports contrasted with the blunt skepticism it voiced from previous sightings of mysterious objects in the skies. Ufologists assert that some multiple sightings of this phenomenon were made during the last 2 years of the Pacific War, and that Foo Fighters were encountered almost as often by B-29 flight crews high above Japan as by their comrades in B-17s over Europe. Japanese people themselves weren't unacquainted with these Sarutobu Inban, as they were called. May 23rd, 1945, and again 2 days later, after the Americans firebombed the capital city, Tokyo businessman observed from his air raid shelter two odd-shaped blue-gray aircraft. He said it was shaped like disc. They slowly passed overhead. He described them as roundish objects, like hotcakes, about 20 yards in diameter. And they moved off without making a sound. Well, Japan's final brush with otherworldly vehicles came just after the country agreed to lay down her arms. During the early morning of August 28, 1945, members of the first post-war U.S. peace delegation boarded a twin-engine Curtiss C-46 commando transport plane in Ijima, a small island not far from Okinawa. They were scheduled for a fuel stop at Iwo Jima before flying on to Atsugi Airfield near Yokohama for the discussions of surrender terms with the Japanese government officials. At 10,000 feet between Ijima and Iwo Jima, Sergeant Leonard Stringfellow, who'd been casually gazing out the airplane's starboard side window, had his attention suddenly riveted by the abrupt appearance of three teardrop-shaped objects. They were brilliant white, like burning magnesium. They were flying in a tight formation. They were traveling in a straight line between drifts of clouds, seemingly parallel to the C-46 and equal to its speed. And these things did seem to be intelligently controlled. There was no sign of wings or fuselage. That same moment, the magnetic navigation instrument needles in the cockpit went crazy as the left engine sputtered oil and began to lose power. Transport faltered, lost altitude, dropping some 50 feet by its port wing in a matter of seconds. Its alarmed co-pilot suddenly appeared in the cabin to announce the obvious, "We're in trouble," and shoved a pair of binoculars at Stringfield, desperately ordering him to find some spot of dry land in that vast stretch of ocean so they could land. And they were going off course, no question about that. After less than a minute of terror aboard the hapless commando, the three objects disappeared into a cloud bank. And as they pulled away, the C-46's engine revved up and returned to normal again. So the plane immediately began to gain altitude and was able to safely arrive at Iwo Jima without further incident. Now, Stringfield's harrowing encounter had been preceded by another daylight sighting made 5,255 miles away by United States Army Air Force crews in the process of bombing Marseille on February 25, 1944, during which they too saw groups of tear-shaped craft apparently monitoring the slaughter of more than 2,000 French residents in the burning city below. The Axis experience with off-world vehicles was fundamentally similar to that confronted by the Allies, which leads these shared incidents some measure of credibility. If it wasn't the enemy doing it, there had to be a third entity involved. Now, according to General Douglas MacArthur, we deal now not with things in the world alone, but with the illimitable distances and as yet unfathomed mysteries of the universe. We're reaching out for a new and boundless frontier. Spaceships to the moon are the primary target in war, no longer limited to the armed forces of an enemy, but instead to include a civilian population of ultimate conflict between a united human race and the sinister forces of some other planetary galaxy. Of such dreams and fantasies as to make life the most exciting of all times. And he may well have been right. Now, with the momentous words, "These proceedings are closed," General MacArthur, representing the victorious Allies, accepted Imperial Japan's surrender aboard the battleship USS Missouri, September 2, 1945. And on that date, they officially ended World War II. Peace prevailed around the world for the first time in 6 years, as nations everywhere drastically scaled back their armed forces. But less than a year after MacArthur officially closed the book on mankind's bloodiest conflict, a huge armada departed U.S. waters on August 26, 1946. It was Operation High Jump, and its destination was Antarctica. The flagship of this armada was the USS Philippine Sea. Captain Delbert Cornwell commanded her 3,448 officers and enlisted men. 27,100 tons, she was among the largest aircraft carriers ever built. powered by 8 boilers and 4 Westinghouse geared steam turbines for a combined 150,000 horsepower and a range of 20,000 nautical miles. In addition to the Philippine Seas, 100 fighters, dive bombers, and torpedo planes, she bristled with arrays of 5-inch artillery and 40-millimeter Beaufort anti-aircraft guns. 4-inch, 2.5-inch, and 1.5-inch steel armor protected the 888-foot-long hull, hangar deck, and conning tower. Now, this heavily armed and armored aircraft carrier was screened by destroyers USS Bronson, USS Henderson, as well as the submarine USS Sinnott, with 10 officers and 71 enlisted men on board. All the warships were supported by the tankers USS Canisteo and USS Cacapon, plus the surprise ships USS Merrick and USS Yancey. Their passage through Antarctic waters was cleared by icebreakers USS Burton Island and USCGC Northwind. Two seaplane tenders, USS Pine Island and USS Currituck, were also part of that fleet. The Martin PBM Mariner and a half a dozen other examples of the Sikorsky H-5 helicopter flitted between USS Philippine Sea and the seaplane tenders. The number of ships and aircraft necessitated their division into an eastern group commanded by Captain George Dufik and a western group headed by Captain Charles Bond, a central group, Rear Admiral Richard Cruzan commanding, and a carrier group with none other than Richard E. Byrd Jr. in overall command. This is the same Admiral Byrd that was renowned for his epic polar explorations during the 1920s and 30s, and the uncle of someone I went to school with, and she was cuter than a bug, let me tell you. It was usually to be found aboard the USS Mount Olympus, Captain Moore commanding, an amphibious force command ship with advanced communications equipment and extensive combat information spaces for large-scale landing operations. Now, collectively, these four groups were known as Task Force 68. Their assignment, referred to officially, if rather vaguely, in an initial report as the United States Navy Antarctic Development Program, was to establish Little America 4, a research base in the Antarctic, to train personnel and test equipment in frigid conditions, and to determine the feasibility of establishing, maintaining, and utilizing bases in the Antarctic, and to investigate possible additional base sites, to develop techniques for establishing, maintaining, and utilizing air bases on ice, and to increase knowledge of hydrographic, geographic, geological, meteorological, and electromagnetic propagation conditions in that area. The report also mentioned that the expedition aimed to consolidate and extend U.S. sovereignty over the largest practicable areas of the Antarctic continent. Now, that was a goal previously and emphatically denied in repeated public pronouncements issued by the U.S. government, even before Operation High Jump inexplicably prematurely ended its operations. In any case, its official, modest, and entirely peaceful agenda was dwarfed and contradicted by the prodigious firepower and armed might assembled at Task Force 68. It was clearly nothing less than a massively armed invasion for conquest of the largest practicable area of the Antarctic continent. In fact, few research scientists and very little investigative equipment was included. Moreover, most of the stated objectives were never attempted, much less achieved. No personnel training or equipment testing took place. No effort was made to explore possibilities for other base sites involving aircraft or ships. No practice maneuvers or exercises of any kind were undertaken. And whatever was learned, if anything, about Antarctica's hydrographic, geographic, geological, meteorological, or electromagnetic propagation conditions was never disclosed to anyone. While Operation High Jump's declared goals represented hardly more than an academic exercise, it was in reality an entirely military affair. Just before departing for Antarctica, Byrd declared to representatives in the American press, "My expedition has military character." Professional physicist and historian Joseph Farrell writes about how Byrd was returned to Washington, D.C., debriefed, and his personal and operational logs on the mission was seized and remain classified to this day. Something was discovered, but it was never admitted. 13 warships supported by flotilla supply vessels, plus 112 aircraft and 4,700 servicemen organized by the U.S. Navy's commanders and rear admirals far outstrips the requirements of some scientific investigation, no matter how ambitious. This unlikely armada entered the Ross Sea ice pack December 31, 1946, finally landing at the Bay of Whales by January 15, 1947. Work commenced at once on building a headquarters, to be known as Little America 4, one of the few previously announced expedition goals that actually was attained. Just 40 days later, the Central Group cast off to join the rest of Task Force 68's units already withdrawing towards South America for repairs, thus prematurely terminating their massive, costly mission, which had originally been scheduled for half a year to 8 months. And now, after only 8 weeks, its aircraft logging 220 hours flying time over 22,700 miles, that's an area half the size of the U.S., and the taking of some 70,000 reconnaissance photos, only a select few of which were subsequently released to the public by the Navy. To this day, the rest, if they still exist, are classified. And this aerial survey also recorded 10 new mountain ranges. Immediately after arriving in several Chilean ports for repairs, as unusual, they were extensive, word of the apparently aborted expedition's high strangeness and the disasters that plagued it began spreading like a wildfire from loose-lipped Operation High Jump Sailors. Even though they were under orders to discuss events of the previous several weeks with no one outside the task force. In fact, Admiral Byrd himself contributed to this speculation. The mainstream press in Chile quoted some of his men to the effect that his task force had run into trouble and suffered many fatalities. Hardly what one would have expected to hear from the leader of a purely scientific enterprise. Van Atta published the results of his startling interview, headlined, aboard the USS Philippine Sea, Mount Olympus on the High Seas, in the March 5, 1947 edition of El Mercurio, a conservative newspaper in Chile's largest, considered the country's paper of record, whose Valparaiso edition is the oldest daily in the Spanish language currently in circulation. It was first published in 1827, as a matter of interest. According to Van Atta, Admiral Richard Byrd warned today it was imperative for the U.S. to initiate immediate defense measures against hostile forces threatening from the Arctic or the Antarctic. The Admiral explained that he wasn't trying to unduly alarm anybody, but the cruel reality is that in case of a new war, the U.S. could be attacked by flying objects that would move from pole to pole at incredible speed. During the 1947 interview with Admiral Mercurio, Admiral Byrd stressed that his statement was made as part of a recapitulation of his own polar experience. Talking about the recently completed expedition, Byrd said the most important result of his discoveries was the effect that they could have on the security of the U.S. He repeated this the above point of view resulting from his personal knowledge gathered both at the North and South Poles. Fantastic speed at which the world is shrinking, recalled the Admiral, was one of the most important lessons he learned during his recent Antarctic exploration. He said, I have to warn my compatriots that the time has ended when they're able to take refuge in our isolation around the certainty that the distances, oceans, and the poles were a guarantee of safety. When he got back to Washington, D.C., after Byrd's interrogation by security service officers, he never uttered another word about Operation High Jump, which was simultaneously classified, thereby legally preventing any of its veterans from ever discussing the mission. Shortly after that, the U.S. Navy published a brief and rather evasive summary of the Antarctic expedition's achievements, which nonetheless stated that some losses had been incurred. Although these were glossed over and minimized, the anonymous report nonetheless admitted that fully half of Byrd's seaplane and helicopter forces had been lost, and he himself was nearly brought down in the aircraft he was flying, avoided a crash only because he jettisoned everything on board in order to stay in the air, save the barest essentials and reconnaissance films he had just taken. During that flight, he'd gone missing for more than 3 hours in an episode of Lost Time that was officially blamed on a failed radio communicator. He was in excess of 3 hours overdue, but his plane did not run out of fuel. That was determined. Some further admitted Task Force 68 did indeed suffer human casualties, but all were supposedly due to accidental causes. Well, as it was once said by James Bond, once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action. December 30, 1946, three men flying George 1, their Martin flying boat, died when it crashed, allegedly during a blizzard. Six surviving crew members were rescued 13 days later. Another man supposedly died in a construction accident, totaling the number of American fatalities at 4. The official summary concludes by explaining that the mission was terminated because of the early approach of winter and worsening weather conditions, which were supposedly just what the Americans had specifically come for and required to test themselves and their equipment. A brief film about Operation High Jump, ironically entitled The Secret Land, was released in 1948. Although it was more of a chest-pounding propaganda piece for the Navy than a real-life documentary, it gives viewers some feeling, however incomplete, about the expedition. This short went otherwise unnoticed by the general public, and beginning with the onset of the Korean War 2 years later, soon fell into virtual obscurity over the next 40 years. After the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, though, millions of the defunct regime's secret papers are suddenly declassified. Among them, surprisingly, a 1947 description of Task Force 68 mission to Antarctica. Well, that Joseph Stalin should have known more about the expedition and the American people isn't really surprising. America's close alliance with Stalin during World War II allowed his spies to infiltrate all levels of the U.S. government, including its armed forces. This espionage peaked, but didn't end with the 1953 conviction of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg for their betrayal of America's atomic bomb research to their communist handlers. As early as the 30s, through the Second World War and into the so-called Cold War, U.S. Congressman Samuel Dixon of New York was a Democratic Party confidant of President Franklin Roosevelt. All the time, he was serving as a paid agent of the NKVD, the forerunner of the Russian secret police that was called later the KGB. There are a lot of others like him, and because of the high positions they often attained, they had access to classified accounts of undertakings such as Operation High Jump. Details of that expedition, hidden from the U.S. public and the rest of the outside world, were transmitted by a Soviet operative to the Kremlin, where they languished till their rediscovery before the turn of the 21st century. Shortly after that, a Moscow television documentary featured a spokesman from the Russian army. His name was Dmitry Filipovich, lieutenant adjutant, and Vladimir Wazilev, a physicist with the prestigious Russian Academy of Sciences. And they finally disclosed the Stalin-era report about Task Force 68's covert experience in Antarctica. Quoted in that report is radio man John P. Swadwak, who served aboard the USS Bronson. About 7 a.m. on the morning in the early morning darkness of January 17, 1947, just 2 days after Richard Byrd's Central Group made landfall at the Bay of Whales, according to Swadwak, we observed on the horizon a bright, colorless light. And, of course, we thought it was another ship. We're below the Antarctic Circle in uncharted waters off Charcot Island in the Weddell Sea. Our radar was activated to no avail. I and my shipmates in the pilot house port side observed for 7 minutes the bright lights that ascended about 45 degrees into the sky very quickly. Now, we couldn't ID the lights because our radar was limited to 250 miles in a straight line. Our quartermaster, John Driscoll, recorded all this in our log. Nearly 3 hours later, the lights, five of them now, reappeared in the same area of the Weddell Sea and began rapidly close on the destroyer. Commander HMS Gimber ordered the ship's 40mm Bofors anti-aircraft gun and 20mm Oerlikon cannons to commence firing on these objects, which flew over the Bronson at high speed and low altitude, estimated to be about 200 feet, without achieving any hits whatsoever. According to the Soviet espionage report, this encounter opened a series of brief but fierce skirmishes that lasted over the next several weeks between Task Force 68 and these lights, resulting in dozens of officers and men killed or wounded. The most casualties were suffered by Admiral Byrd's Central Group, which, as even the sanitized post-expedition Navy version of the report admitted, had to be evacuated by the Burton Island icebreaker from the Bay of Whales on February 22, 1947. A variety of several strangely configured aircraft then executed noiseless, menacing passes over the naval units, which fired their ordnance at the triangular and boomerang-shaped vehicles. No casualties were sustained on either side during these first fleeting near misses, and the unidentifiable vessels didn't return fire before quickly vanishing into the morning sky. A few hours later, in the early afternoon, an enormous cigar-shaped object floated silently like a gargantuan dirigible, low above the surface of the sea toward the task force. When this unmarked intruder unintentionally drifted within range of the USS Sinnott, Commander Joseph Eisenhower ordered the submarine's deck gun to commence firing. A direct hit with a 5-inch shell amidship caused the huge craft to veer wildly out of control and crash nose down into the water. It was Task Force 68's only kill. Just 4 days of encounters after a kind of a parting shot, the Spherical Lights executed a dramatic attack witnessed by Lieutenant John Sarrison, a flying boat pilot aboard one of the seaplane tenders. According to him, the thing shot vertically out of the water at tremendous velocity as though pursued by the devil and flew between the mast of the ship that is at a high speed that the radio antennas oscillated back and forth in its turbulence. An aircraft, specifically a Martin flying boat from the Currituck, then took off just a few moments later and was struck by an unknown type of ray from that object. It almost instantly crashed into the sea near our vessel. He said, "I could hardly believe what I saw. That thing flew without making any sound as it passed close over our ships and harmlessly through their lethal anti-aircraft fire. Having personally witnessed this attack by the object that flew out of the sea, all I can say is it was frightening." About 10 miles away, the torpedo boat Maddox burst into flames and began to sink. And despite the danger, rescue boats went to her aid before she sank some 20 minutes later. The NKVD report refers to Sayerson's ship as the Casablanca, probably because a Russian spy had trouble pronouncing its real name, Currituck. Soviet agent also stated that an American vessel set afire and destroyed was the USS Maddox, either a torpedo boat or a torpedo-carrying destroyer. Official records list only the Henderson and the Brownson as part of Task Force 68, which possessed no torpedo boats. Both destroyers survived the mission and are accounted for. The USS Maddox was indeed sunk by enemy action, but 5 years earlier by a German dive bomber during the Allied invasion of Sicily. Actually, there were three American destroyers known by the name of USS Maddox: DD-168, DD-622, and DD-731, all of them contemporaneous. The U.S. Navy has long been notorious for falsifying the identity of its ships and rewriting their histories to somehow run counter to or embarrass official policy. Cases to point include 1944's Battle of Slapton Sands before the Normandy invasion, which a number of vessels were sunk and a lot of servicemen were killed by the Kriegsmarine torpedo boats, an event that went unacknowledged for the next 50 years. Reports of another American massacre off the Italian coast near Bari in 1943 were censored, when numerous Allied units illegally carrying nerve gas were sunk by the Luftwaffe. The largest loss of U.S. troops at sea, 1,015 fatalities, and a single incident occurred when the British troop ship HMS Rona was sunk by a German-guided missile in the Mediterranean, November 26, 1943. Only after an aged veteran won a lengthy and costly lawsuit against the U.S. Navy 57 years later did they receive official recognition for their role in the disaster. So, the Maddox, cited by the Soviet espionage, is similarly consigned to an official memory hole. That February 26th engagement was the last experienced by the Task Force 68, which by then was already in headlong retreat from Antarctica. And although the identity of these invincible lights escaped Lieutenant Sarrison, he wondered if they were perhaps German wonder weapons operated by survivors of the recently defeated Third Reich, flying out of a secret Antarctic base. And a lot of investigators do share that speculation. I would point out there's long been stories about Base 211 that was supposedly established by the Germans as a place for Hitler to go hide. Well, we've run out of time for tonight's show. We'll be back tomorrow, and once again, we'll talk more about military encounters with extraterrestrials. Till then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.